Rick, you can't just be the good guy and expect to live, okay? Not anymore.
Welcome to episode number 31 of the Z Realm podcast, where Z, or Z, stands for zombie. I am one of three co-hosts, KMO, and I'm speaking to you from the Buffalo River Coffee Company in Hohenwald, Tennessee. And I am joined by...
I am Marty, and I'm here in Greensboro, my home, and I have my wonderful dog here next to me, and he is getting rubbed and scratched while we're talking.
And I'm Olga, and I'm sitting on my comfy couch. My negative space cozy couch in my living room in Brooklyn, New York City.
And we are here to talk about episode number 10 from season 2 of The Walking Dead on AMC. It's called 18 Miles Out because Randall, the kid they decided they couldn't leave impaled on a fence last week, now needs to be escorted off the farm, and they blindfold him, they put a hood on him, they put earbuds in his ears and make him listen to music as they drive him in the hatchback of the hybrid away from the farm. They're going to take him 18 miles out and drop him off, and good luck to him. And that's the setup.
And the show, what blew me away about this particular episode right off the bat is it kind of did one of these start in the middles, or actually kind of start at the end. And before the credits, there was this thing that was already in motion, and it actually, the whole episode took place quite a while after the previous episode.
About 1 week.
But it seemed like there was maybe more missing time in there, like, because they didn't, did they specifically say 1 week later?
Yeah, I think they did, but I have some serious gripes about this episode, which relate to continuity, for sure, so we can talk about that in due course. But
that was one of the things that surprised me, was how it didn't, like, pick up where the last one left off. It jumped straight ahead, and then it never really worked its way back to where the previous episode had left off. There was a lot of missing stuff, and I was curious and wondering what was going on and what had happened.
Well, this one starts with a flash forward. So it starts with an action scene which takes place really near the end of the episode, and then after the opening credits, we jump back a bit, and we work up to that action scene.
Right. It was all very confusing, especially when you've had as much to drink as I had had.
Marty, I think you should have your very own continuity department keeping track of this particular episode. And you may perhaps hire the continuity team that The Walking Dead this week did not hire. Instead, they spent the money they saved on continuity on extra zombies. So we had a lot of zombies this episode, and it begins with a lot of zombies. And, yeah, I thought, well, is this a dream? Is this a flashback? Is this a flash forward? Oh, my God, so many zombies. Make it stop, make it stop, make it stop, which is what you want to be saying in a zombie show, right? So I really liked the editing and the montage, actually, and I really liked the point of view sequences from Randall's point of view with the loud music, and, you know, he's like mumbling, his mouth is taped shut, and he's looking, so we as the watchers are looking out from the hatchback, from inside the car, his point of view, and we can't hear anything because of the loud blaring music that's playing, and there was pretty fancy editing going on in this, call it what you will, interesting or not interesting episode. There was some pretty fancy editing, and it got faster and faster and faster as the episode progressed. And that was the cutting back between the men, Rick and Shane, and the at times shackled and taped up Randall, and doing this very, very explosive male valiant fighting and exploring and gathering gasoline and fighting each other, and then cutting back to the women back at the house who were being very emotional and hysterical and losing it and fighting in very different ways. And what I found really funny is Lori is eating a lot in this episode. Skinny Lori. Skinny
pregnant
Lori.
Yeah.
Right. She should be eating, right?
she's starving for two now. Yeah.
Speaking of starving for two, Marty, I know that you were at a... an Academy Awards party last night. I was blown away by Angelina Jolie standing up on stage with her leg cocked in that weird position so you could see it sticking through the slit in her dress, and her super skinny arms, and her face was just the big bony structure because she's so just like dehydrated, it looks like. She was just freakish looking.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was not hot at all.
No.
Well, wait a minute. The camera puts on like 50 pounds, right? What is the so how skinny could she possibly be?
She's pulling a Lori for sure.
Well, and then not long after her presentation, one of the winners got up there and like mocked her and struck that same pose.
That was hilarious.
And it was a dude. It was really cool. It was awesome.
Wow, Kamo, you watched the Academy Awards?
I caught that piece of it, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I should throw out some props. I was at the home of C and Z Realm listener Lauren K, who lives about an hour from the farm, and he made me some hamburgers, and I drank some wine at his place, and I'll mention on the C Realm that just as I was walking out the door, he actually slipped a little cash into my hand as well. That was a contribution to the podcast.
Aww.
Not
thank
this
you,
podcast,
Lord.
But this podcaster.
Very cool.
Well, I was at my mom's house, and she made me some meatballs and salad, and she tried to get me to watch the Academy Awards with her, but instead I was doing laundry. And I got to say, that was the quickest, most efficient laundry session I have ever done, because I went down there at 8:45, and I got everything out of the dryer and folded up, lickety-split, and was up there in front of the television set by 9.
Right.
Very nice.
I'm going to have to do that again.
You work well under pressure, is what
you're
saying.
Exactly. Very well. Yep.
So, well, this is an easy episode to drift away from because I have to say it's probably the weakest episode since the return from the mid-season hiatus. We should probably get back to it. They being Shane and Rick, are driving Randall 18 miles away from Herschel's farm where they're going to kick him out. He is blindfolded. He's got the earbuds in his ears. He doesn't know where they're going. But before they get 18 miles out, Rick stops the car, and he and Shane get out, and they have a little talk.
Thought we were going further. We are. 18 miles out. That's why we're stopping. I want to talk. Been waiting a week till we were going to do this. I just want to talk. We don't need to. We do. I mean, we don't. We're doing this. I get it. He's passed out when y'all brought him back. Don't know where the farm is.
That isn't what I need to talk to you about. I heard what really happened to the school. Was it to survive?
Yeah. One of us wasn't going to make it out. Had to be him. One shot to the leg. Carl lives. Reality is, he had no business being here. There. Whatever. You don't think I would have done it?
Oh, man, I know you wouldn't have.
You don't think I can keep Lori or Carl safe?
I didn't say that. Or my baby.
Is it gonna have to be me too?
Rick, you can't just be the good guy and expect to live, okay? Not anymore.
I'm not the good guy anymore. To save Carl's life, I would have done anything, anything. Now, Lori says you're dangerous, but you're not gonna be dangerous. Not to us, not to me, not anymore. How about you look at me? You and Lori. I get what happened. When I figured it out, and I figured it out pretty quickly, I wanted to break your jaw. Let you choke on your teeth. But I didn't. That wasn't weakness. It took everything. That is my wife. That is my son. That is my unborn child. I will stay alive to keep them alive. You don't love her. You think you do, but you don't. Now the only way you and me keep on is that you accept everything I just said right here, right now, and we move forward with that understanding.
Started, it was just a couple weird stories on the news. And it was so quick. Everything, it just happened. 2 weeks later, I'm in the hospital, and there were soldiers shooting people in the halls. They were shooting people, man, not walkers. Then the walkers came through. You know, I tried to get you out. I tried, but we weren't going to make it. Man, there was no way, and I knew it, but I couldn't live with it. I couldn't live knowing, but I had to. I didn't keep Lori and Carl alive, man. They kept me alive. I want you to know that I didn't look at her before that. Brother, if I could take it all back, I would.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? The whole Randall thing is a contrivance, right, to get Rick and Shane out alone in the middle of the road to talk and to have several arguments, to have sort of like this dual hero's journey. Well, Rick basically says, that's my woman, that's my son, that's my baby, get your hands off. And you're gonna follow my lead, I'm the leader, and what you think is weak is actually me being strong, and you just gotta cut the shit.
Very well said. Yeah, and Shane does not... Shane kind of takes it, he, you know, a lot of the time during this episode when Rick is really laying down the law. Shane does sort of cow a little bit and take it. And, you know, it's just, Shane is such an interesting character because there's times when he will just absolutely do these bullheaded, just sudden, you know, moves. And then there's times where he is just Mr. Sedate. And I was impressed with how he played it. But knowing what he's capable of, it was an incredibly nervous, sort of nerve-wracking piece because I was confident he was going to just explode and lash out at Rick, which, you know, spoiler alert, he does.
I thought that this was a really naive move on Rick's part, that they're going to have this one, 2 or 3 minute little talk and it's all going to be settled. And Rick is going to lay down this ultimatum. He's going to say, that's how it is. That's how it's got to be. Are you on board with that? And, you know, Shane can either shoot him or say, yeah, sure, I'm on board. But just because he says he's on board doesn't mean that's the end of it. So Rick was really naive to think that it would be the end of it.
Right.
Well, you know, but Rick has shown over and over again that sort of that innocence. Like when they were in the bar and those guys were outside, he said, your friends drew on us. We had no choice. Now, come on. So he's constantly trying to be the good guy, do the right thing, and, you know, I don't know if you'd say be the bigger man, but he's definitely, he's willing to face these challenges and face these issues that present themselves. He's not turning away and going the other way. He's facing them. He's facing them very naively, but he's also facing them honestly. So, you know, I can't help but see that as sort of true to his character.
All right, well, so Rick kind of does this whole, like, you've been a really bad boy, now let's get back in the car and go where we're going, right? And they get back in the car, and Shane's just like, you know, the dunce in the corner, and he's looking out the window, and he's looking at this shambling lone zombie in the field.
Don't you think that was representing how he felt, like an outcast, like the person on the outside?
Oh, that's very poetic. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that's what it was. I thought it was a thing where they were going out there and he's going, I am all alone. And you just saw that zombie walk through the field and he was thinking, that's me.
Wow.
Well, that's nice, Marty.
I mean, that's what I thought.
My immediate reaction was Shane's just thinking, like, there's no escape in this world. Like, there they are. They're everywhere. There's one in the field, you know. Kind of surprised they didn't take that one out. So now I'm hoping that lone shambling zombie will make it to the farm, you know, in a couple of episodes. Maybe mm-hmm. it'll take him a while to shamble over there, but especially since he's shambling on both sides of the road.
But unless he's walking directly parallel to the road, I think there's every possibility that he would have crossed the road like the chicken.
Well, he absolutely must have crossed the road because Shane glimpses him out the passenger side window, both leaving and coming back to the farm. So that's
one really confused shambling zombie. So he's just probably going back and forth and back and forth.
Do we see the zombie in enough detail to be sure it's the same lone zombie?
Yes. Yeah. It's a lone zombie wearing a suit jacket or a suit coat and a tie.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not a human. It's shambling.
And it's clearly, when they shot the scenes of the zombie, they were driving one way and they shot it and they immediately turned around and drove back the other way and they shot it again going the other way. So that it's the same time of day, it's the same field. But then we cut to, you know, shots of Shane looking out the passenger side window. So for him to see it out of the passenger side window, both going and coming, it had to be on different sides of the road.
Right.
So compared to other continuity gaffes in this episode, very minor. But it certainly set the tone for what's coming later.
I really enjoyed the juxtaposition of this situation that Shane and Rick find themselves in, which is really violent and back to the women, and the closer we get to the end of the episode, the quicker those juxtapositions happen. For instance, I was taking notes, and when Shane and Rick start slicing the zombies' heads with a knife and then start fighting with each other, I said, crazy! And then the very next thing Maggie says, are you crazy? Like, it was just so weird. And then back to the zombie horde. You know, somebody had who was the director of this one?
Was Ernest R. Dickerson.
Yes, who has actually done a lot of stuff.
It's very creative editing. I mean, probably a little over-the-top creative, because it almost made me think that this was it started to get a little manipulative and felt like this was a Greek tragedy, that there were, like, all Greek choruses constantly repeating what was happening to make sure that you got it, you know?
And it was that total kind of gender role thing, too, where the men were out being all manly and the women were at home. You know, like she said, well, we'll talk about that later, but the conversations they were having about their roles back at home. So I just thought all that stuff was, you know, I really liked this episode, and I thought all that stuff was really interesting, and I thought pretty well handled, personally.
The undead have risen. Aim for the head, and head for the Zed.
But Beth had the fever. She was comatose. It seemed as though she were on her way to becoming a walker, and then this episode rolls around, and no, none of that's really happening. She's really just depressed.
I have a different take on that because of We're Alive. In We're Alive, there's two distinct instances of people going into shock, and there's this description from the specialist, the military specialist, as to what happens medically when people go into shock, and it's very much what Beth went into. And how important it is to keep them alive and to give them IV and liquid. And so maybe I'm influenced by that, but when Beth collapsed, I'm thinking she went into shock.
Right. After seeing her mother as a zombie and all the people that she loved, you know, getting shot and, you know, transformed and realizing that all her hopes for a cure and to get them back were dashed, you know, that's going to make you go into shock.
She's so
especially
made.
If you're a young girl that's been sort of protected. You know?
Unlike Lori, who's all of a sudden this strong female, I'm going to keep everybody together, and I'm going to keep our job is to keep the stability of the place and the morality of everybody, and to continue keeping on. And she gives Andrea this whole speech about the division of labor, sort of like, you know, you're not doing your appropriate gender role, honey. You're not over here cooking and cleaning. You're sitting up on that RV with a gun in your hand getting a suntan.
Right.
And so then Andrea and Lori have this really great argument.
And that's the one where they're in the kitchen and
yes, and
Laurie's cooking and stuff.
And Laurie's basically saying, look, you're not doing your womanly duties. You're out there playing man. You're not helping out.
And where Laurie's like, we're providing stability here. And Andrea says, you're the selfish one, acting like the queen. And we're piling up our losses. Go and tell her everything's going to be okay. She'll get a husband, a son, a baby, a boyfriend. I love the way she said that. I was like, oh, snap.
Yes. Yeah, that was a total. I was super drunk laying on my sofa watching it late last night. And I was like, oh, shit, when she said that.
It's like, you're hogging up everything. What do you know about it?
You were wrong. Like Dale taking my gun, that wasn't your decision. She has to choose to live on her own. She has to find her own reasons.
You want me to tie a noose for her?
If she's serious, she'll figure out a way.
Doesn't mean I can't stop her or let her know that I care.
That has nothing to do with it, Laurie. She only has so many choices in front of her. And she believes the best one is suicide.
That's not an option.
Of course it is. She doesn't need to be yelled at or treated like a child.
She needs a loaded gun, right? You'll understand if I don't send you in there.
I came through it.
And became such a productive member of the group. Let Maggie handle this her way.
I contribute. I help keep this place safe.
The men can handle this on their own. They don't need your help.
I'm sorry, what would you have me do?
Oh, there's plenty of work to go around.
Are you serious? Everything falls apart. You're in my face over skipping laundry?
Puts a burden on the rest of us. On me and Carol and Patricia and Maggie, cooking and cleaning and caring for Beth. And you don't care about anyone but yourself. You sit up on that RV working on your tan with a shotgun in your lap.
Now, I am on watch against walkers. That is what matters. Not fresh mint leaves and the lemonade.
We are providing stability. We are trying to create a life worth living.
Are you kidding me?
Look, I went after Rick. I took down two walkers.
After crashing Maggie's car. Ever apologize for that?
Crashing her. You're insane.
No, you are. And you're the one that's self-centered. The way you take it all for granted.
My husband is out there for the 100th time. My son was shot. Don't you dare tell me that I take this for granted.
You don't get it, do you? Your husband came back from the dead. Your son, too. And now you got a baby on the way. The rest of us have piled up our losses. Me, Carol, Beth. But you just keep on keeping on.
We all suffered.
Playing house, acting like the queen bee, laying down rules for everybody but yourself. You know what? Go ahead. Go in there and tell that little girl that everything's going to be okay, just like it is for you. She'll get a husband, a son, baby, boyfriend. She just has to look on the bright side.
You know, what do you know about loss?
About loss. She's lost nothing.
Yeah.
She's lost nothing. She
a little skin. Just a little skin in a car wreck that she didn't even need to be in.
Yeah. You know, what that scene communicated to me was just the huge difference between the TV show and the comic, because in the comic, where there really are zombies everywhere, Andrea's worth has been proven time and time again. She absolutely, positively needs to be out there up on that RV with a rifle in her hands. Because she is, you know, next to Shane, and Shane's gone by that time, but she is the most competent marksman they have. And the idea that, you know, she is shirking her duty by not being in the farmhouse doing laundry or something is absurd.
Right.
But on the TV show, particularly around the farm where zombies are as rare as hen's teeth, yeah, she is kind of, you know, just pissing away her time and not doing anything to help.
Well, especially since in the show she's missing. She's not a good markswoman.
Well, there was an episode that established that she was, that Shane just needed to put her in a desperate situation to bring out her real skills, and that's when he took her to that subdivision, I think knowing that they would be overrun by zombies. And then when her gun was jammed and she was having trouble and a zombie was bearing down on her, he just stood back, and she's like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? And then because she was in that situation, then her true competence came to the surface. And from there on out, she's had a different bearing, and she has been, you know, a badass. It's just there's been no call for it.
It was great to see Laurie back because, you know, it was great to see Andrea back because it had been so many episodes since she'd really had anything substantial to say or to do. And she's a great character, and she's an interesting character. And it was, you know, I think you were, you know, it was very clear, and it was not subtle at all. But this was a show. This was an episode where, and it might be a good title, where lines were drawn.
Oh.
And, because it was Rick and Shane, and Rick was saying, dude, here's the way it's going to work. And it was basically Lori doing the exact same thing with Andrea, saying, here's the deal, and here's what we're doing, and here's how you're going to do it. And even with the stuff with Beth, all that stuff, it was very much a sort of, I don't care what you say we're going to do, I'm going to do it, you know, my way, and I understand, and all this stuff. So, I don't know, we're setting this thing up for sort of a civil war, you know, in that group, and I'm very interested to see how they work that all out.
Another interesting thing about this episode, Herschel's not in it, Glenn's not in it, Daryl's not in it, T-Dog's not in it, so
no,
tea time will be even sparser than usual this week. But not only were those characters not in it, you know, clearly the actors weren't involved in the production, so they're not getting paid, so AMC is saving some money there. But there's all these references as if they're just around the corner. It's like, well, where's Maggie? Oh, I just saw her walking with Glenn. It's like, oh, would you go get her? You know, as if Glenn is right there, we just don't get to see him. And then later when Maggie is, you know, laying down the law to Andrea and saying, you can't come back in here, she happens to mention that Herschel is inside sewing up Beth. You know, but we haven't seen him, and we're not going to see him because he's not in this episode, you know? And what this episode proved to me was, you know, we've been calling for zombies. We need more zombies, more zombies. And this episode really gave us zombies and good zombies, and I really like the zombie parts, but it doesn't mean that it was necessarily a superior episode.
I thought all the stuff between Shane and Rick and the scenes between Andrea and Lori, I thought that was the high point of the episode, you know, more so than the zombies, because that is really laying some groundwork, and it's really establishing these characters, I thought, further and better and deeper than they had been so far. And what I like is what they're doing with Lori is really interesting, and now I'm really enjoying that character, which I really haven't. And what they're doing with Rick is just more of what they did, you know, since the season started back up again. They are showing Rick as a capable, strong badass that will do what needs to be done. And it's awesome. You know, he's not a wimp. He's not sitting in the corner crying. He is getting shit done. And I'm enjoying that.
I think when Rick shot Dave and Tony just in an instant, because it absolutely had to be done in that instant, that demonstrates what you're saying. You know, he's not a wimp. He is not this sort of quixotic loser in his fantasy land. But, you know, when he says, well, yeah, we're probably going to have to kill this guy, but I have to sleep on it. You know, you can trust Rick to do the right thing because he's demonstrated he will do the right thing when it needs doing. But, you know, we should take time to deliberate and, you know, do our best not to get really cavalier and casual about killing people.
I wondered, actually, the way things had gone down, how much their trip out 18 miles to get rid of this dude was known by the rest of the people back at the house. You know, like maybe that was a commando mission that they went on. You know, maybe there had been some dissension back at the camp. You know, I just wanted to know more about what spurred them to suddenly go. I mean, I know they talked about it in the previous episode about what they were going to do with this guy, but this one started with, you know, time had passed, the guy had healed enough, they could take him out. They had him in a car, they're bound, they had a plan. And I was like, well, I want to know what happened that got them there. And they never really said that. So I just thought it was very brave.
I think Rick announced in the previous episode, you know, we're going to give this guy a week to heal up a bit. And then we're going to drive him away blindfolded so that, you know, we're not killing him. He's got a fighting chance, but he doesn't know where the farm is and he can't lead other people to us. And they didn't revisit it in this episode, but that seems to be the default plan from last week.
Gotcha.
So
it still seems like, too, it'd be like the Star Trek away team. You wouldn't take, you know, Spock and Kirk to go do this mission. You know, you might take one or the other and then like a, you know, just a T-Dog with you to do this. You know, you wouldn't take your two leaders.
Well, they couldn't take T-Dog because they were going to have a conversation.
That's right. It had to be that private thing. Come on, Shane, let's go. Maybe that's the whole thing. Maybe they took that guy out there when he was not healthy enough to be out there because Rick just had to get this shit settled, and that's why it was rushed.
Well, the guy, is Randall. Randall fell off the building in the previous episode and got the wrought iron fence spike, you know, with the barbs on it, shoved through his femur, you know, just above the knee. This is a crippling injury. Even after years of convalescence and physical therapy, he is probably still not going to be walking properly. And yet, here on The Walking Dead, 1 week after Herschel says, you know, maybe it would be kinder and gentler just to put him out of his misery right now, Randall is walking around with no problem. He's wearing the same clothes he was wearing the week before, and there's not even a tear in his clothes where the wrought iron spike had been shoved through his leg. So this was another continuity gaffe, in my opinion, that really took me out of the episode and had me sort of scoffing at it rather than getting into it.
Well, I believe there would have been other clothes at the farmhouse for him to put on, or one of the ladies would have stitched it up for him, you know, and laundered it. So, and I'm only saying that because that's what they said in the episode. Obviously, I don't believe that's necessarily, you know, anybody's specific work based on gender, but. You know, I don't know if I would have a problem with that. It's kind of like, you know, if you watched it and you're going, look, he has the same underwear on a week later. I don't know. They didn't.
Well,
I just, he's going to change
a small thing compared to the actual leg. I mean,
yes,
as soon as he cuts his bonds, he leaps up and he stomps a zombie in the head with the bad leg.
Yes. Now, a zombie might motivate you to, you know, do one of those adrenaline deals where, like, you can lift the car off your child. So, you know, I guess you could, if you wanted to defend the thing, you could say that. But, you're right. There is some suspicion there, unless it's been longer than 2 weeks. But like you say, even if it had been a month, it still would be outstanding for him to be able to do all that stuff on that leg.
You know, I've had orthoscopic surgery on my knee where they make a tiny itty-bitty little incision, and then they snake in this little, you know, surgically pristine cable with a camera on it and look around and make adjustments. And after that, I was in bed with my leg wrapped up on, you know, opiates for a solid week. It was a week before I could get up on crutches and just hobble around a little bit. And this guy shows no sign whatsoever of having been injured at all.
And he's definitely not on opiates because he is functioning and driving a car.
Okay, you had to go there, and I'm going to have to give you my example, which is I have a client. I'm a massage therapist. I have a client whose horse threw her. Her femur broke and went sticking out of her thigh. She got rushed to the hospital, the nearest one in Pennsylvania, and had a titanium piece put inside her femur. A week later, it was discovered that it was put in wrong. So she got it opened up again, and surgery done again. She had me coming to her house immediately, doing massage on her immediately. 3 to 5 times a week. She was dancing on her leg by the time she got a notice from the doctor saying you could put 30% of your weight on it. She
How
was
long
getting
was that?
A massage. That was like, 3 months or something like that. It was a very short period
months.
Of time. But she was getting physical, manual massage from me immediately and thereafter, and she was doing physical therapy, and she was determined. So it is possible. It is not a week like this, but it is possible to heal from a very traumatic injury if you do the work, if you treat it like a daily job.
I have the feeling he was in a bed at the farmhouse, though. I don't think anybody was massaging.
I don't think he was getting massage or opium or getting new pants stitched up or any of that stuff.
And he was getting worked on by a vet.
Exactly.
Who was it, though, that suggested that every time a doctor dies, the doctors around him absorb all of their healing powers and skills? And since that all the doctors in the area have died, that Herschel has absorbed this enormous amount of healing ability from all of the dead doctors, and now he's a super healer.
Oh, that's cool.
I forget who said
that. I
like it.
Let's just go with that.
Let's go with that. So, you know, I in this episode, I liked, this was a very talky episode, and it was heavily polarized because you had the men, the women, and I like when Shane says, I didn't keep Carl and Lori alive, they kept me alive. And I like when Beth says, what are we waiting for? I mean, I think that it's really important in a zombie apocalypse story to have one, if not many, characters who are just wanting an out, who are just, you know, putting the case for what's the point. And she says, what are we waiting for? Let's both do it. Who's going to protect us? We're alone. I don't want to be gutted, she says. I want to go in this bed tonight with you beside me, please. And back to the zombies.
Well, that's been a common thread on this show, the whole, you know, people choosing, you know, that final exit.
Yeah.
You had the lady at the CDC. You had Andrea, you know, yeah. You had all these people who were just, you know, no, I don't want to do this anymore.
The guy who got hit and hung himself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that's going to be a choice people are going to make.
The guy who opted out. And this is what makes Andrea such a fascinating character, because if last week she was doing this whole Zen presence quiet thing, this week she's speaking out. And, you know, afterwards I listened to a conversation with Joan Halifax, who is who's a Buddhist monk. And she answered the question put to her, how do you speak truth to power? And she said, with a broken heart. And it really touched me because it reminded me of Andrea. And Andrea has a horribly broken heart. And by a broken heart, it just means an open heart, you know. And she's able to speak truth to Lori, you know, like, and she's able to see the truth of Beth's situation. And she's, like, wiser than any of them put together, because she knew Beth was really bluffing. She knew Beth didn't have the guts, really, to off herself. And that if left to her own devices, she was just going to go halfway, freak herself out, and then not do it again. Like, that's what it seems like to me. Of course, everybody else gets really freaked out that Andrea left Beth and allowed her to slash her wrist. And Andrea's just, like, not at all put off by this. She's not surprised by this, and she says, you'll see. But she didn't do it, she says. She didn't do it, and she won't do it again. And I just, you know, I think that that's a really powerful place for Andrea to be. It's a really painful place, and it goes beyond, it's a place beyond just, hey, I don't want to be here.
Well, it's another example of the stuff that Shane does, where he knows what's right. And he just does it. And that was, like, you know, Andrea said last episode about, you know, he does the right thing, but his technique is bad. His presentation is bad. And Andrea, in this episode, kind of did that same thing. I mean, she knew what was right for Beth, but the way she handled it, you know, wasn't cool. You know, like, maybe it'd have been better to kind of stay close by, or, you know, spy on her or do something, or admit, hey, look, I've left her in there because I think that she needs to, like, face this thing. But she didn't. She just left. And so everybody's very mad at her. And, you know, it's just, again, we're splitting it up into two teams. And it's Andrea and Shane versus everybody else.
The people who just do what needs to be done and let everybody else deal with it in their own way, versus the people who want to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it until they reach consensus.
Right.
Well, one is a strong individual, or two of them are strong individuals, and the others are people trying to build a society, you know, that's sort of, you know, amenable to a larger group of people where there's a, you know, sort of joint decisions. And obviously you've got a king and a queen, you know, for all intents and purposes, but you still, you know, they're taking input and trying to be moralistic about it and make those sort of larger societal type, you know, decisions and choices.
Well, I need to be out of here in just about 12 minutes, so we should probably move things along.
Okay.
Rick and Shane are going to drive 18 miles out and then drop Randall off, and good luck to Randall. And we get a shot of the odometer, and it's been more than 18 miles. I think it's pretty funny that Rick set the trip odometer, but I guess that was the plan. You know, they're going to drive 18 miles out. And it's at like 18.7. Shane sees that, and he says, it's been 18 miles. What are you waiting for? And Rick, of course, being Rick, he's like, well, I don't want to just drop him off in the middle of nowhere. Let's give him a little fighting chance. Let's find him some shelter, and we're going to drop him off, and we're going to go scrounge some supplies for him and, you know, really give him a fighting chance and not just throw him to the wolves in a way that lets us, you know, pretend that we didn't kill him when, in fact, we did. Good for Rick. So now when it becomes clear to Randall that he's being abandoned – you know, very wisely, he realizes that his only hope of survival, really, is to hook up with a group. And he admits that he'd hooked up with a bad group before, but that's just the choice that fate had thrown to him. You know, he could hook up with the bad folks, or he could go it alone and die. So let's hear him pleading to not be left.
All right.
Oh, come on, don't be stupid. I owe you guys. I can help protect what you got. Why would you save my life just to kill me by leaving me here? One guy can't make it alone. That's why I was with those dudes. I was alone. Don't be stupid. I'm not like them. I'm just some guy. I used to watch football and screw around on the internet. I live with my mom. I lost her like you lost people. I went to school with Maggie, for God's sake. Went to church, rode the bench on varsity baseball.
You went to school with Maggie?
You go to school with Maggie. I answer the questions. You go to school with Maggie.
She didn't know me. Didn't even know I existed. I mean, I knew her. I knew who her dad was. There is no way I would ever do anything to hurt her.
Jesus.
Or her family. Or you, or your people. I'm not like the guys I was with.
He knows where the farm is, Rick. Where we are, he knows. Say he finds his way back to his people.
Shit, no! Not now! Just not now!
Well, when, Rick? When? When I've had a chance to think about it.
Don't let him kill me. Please don't.
Shut up!
We're going back. It's a man's life. I need a night to think it through.
You gotta bring this piece of garbage. This piece of garbage. He shot at you, Rick. He ran with men who tried to kill you. You gonna bring him back to where Lori sleeps? To where Carl sleeps?
He'll be locked up in the barn unless you bust it open.
I don't start this.
I'm taking the knife.
You know, man, you take that. You think on it, Rick. Keep struggling with it. It ain't hard, man. The right choice is the one that keeps us alive.
It's always the same with you.
It's like the first moments. It's whenever you're put to the test.
Stop acting like you know the way ahead, like you know the rules. There are no rules, man. We're lost.
No, man. I know exactly where I am.
You don't know shit anymore.
You can do it, man.
It's my call, man.
I don't think you can keep them safe.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of believe the guy, but...
I'm not so sure.
Okay, but I do not believe that he went to school with Maggie, and here's why. This is a small town. He knows Maggie's father. He knows, you know, Herschel, the local vet. There's no way that Maggie wouldn't recognize him. There's no way that Herschel, who recognized zombies who worked in gas stations the next town over, wouldn't know this kid or know his family. And that kid spending a week on Herschel's farm never would have communicated to them in order to get their sympathy. Hey, remember me? We went to school together. We were in Mrs. So-and-so's science class together. You know, the fact that he brings this up out of nowhere is, in my mind, just absolute desperation. He's saying anything he can in order to keep from being left. And if he even thought about it, he would realize this is the stupidest thing in the world for him to say. Because as soon as Rick hears it, Rick realizes, oh, wait, if he knows Herschel, if he knows Maggie, he can lead people back to the farm. We can't let him go.
We need to kill him.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But how totally exciting and suspenseful and violent and bloody that whole zombie sequence is when Rick and Shane are fighting and Shane throws that metal rod at Rick, misses, hits the window, and releases a whole bunch of zombies from that building. It's like, you know, here's Rick and Shane, they've just debilitated themselves by nearly killing each other, and now they gotta fight off zombies, and they're covered in blood, and now they're using this trick where they smear their blood on something to get a zombie head to go licking it, and then they impale it with a knife in the head.
Which, can you even do that? Can you stab somebody through the skull?
You know, yeah, I was thinking maybe the zombie skulls are a bit rotted and softer than human skulls, but no, they were. That was far too easy what they were doing.
Yeah, it looked like they were poking it through styrofoam.
But I want to point out the one really amazing shot from the sequence that Olga just described. Shane has thrown that big wrench at Rick. Rick ducks. It breaks the window. The window is in fragments, and we can see Shane's reflection in one of the broken fragments of glass that's sort of hanging.
Yes.
From the, you know, the broken paint or the broken structure of the window. And then as we see Shane's reflection, a zombie comes into view on the other side of the broken glass. And there's a lot going on there, you know, in terms of,
wow.
of subtext, you know, because right. we see Shane at his most feral, his most ferocious. He's got blood on him from fighting. He has just thrown this thing at Rick that if he'd connected with that, if that had scored a hit, Rick might have been killed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or he'd have been at least knocked down enough that the zombies that then poured out would have taken him.
And so Rick kills the first zombie with a knife to the head, and then when he sees there's more coming out of the window, he pulls that zombie body on top of him.
Yeah.
And right.
The zombies see just Shane, you know, the one fresh meat right out in front, so they all go streaming past, and Rick gets away, and then the action scene begins.
It was a badass whole thing.
Yeah. You know, Rick finds him, not Rick, Shane runs away from the zombies and finds himself, and tries to hold off inside of a school bus, and as the zombies are trying to get to him, and then there's this whole struggle. Yeah, so now, and Randall at this point is saying, hey, he was just about to kill you. Like, this is why I kind of don't believe Randall either, is because he's so opportunistic. At this point, he's like, let's go. Let's leave Shane there. He was just about to kill you. You're not going to rescue Shane, right? He was going to kill you. And Rick is like, shut up, just shut up.
Well, they drive off, you know, and Shane watches them disappear.
I know.
Like, sons of bitches. And he's, you know, wanting them to come back. And I swear, I thought
Me too.
That they had left him. And I could understand that.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't blame Rick for just leaving him out there.
But not
Rick is smarter than that. Rick
is more moral than that, you know?
Rick is more moral. He's a stand-up guy.
But he's also smart. It's like, you know, when he had those zombies on top of him, there was a second zombie and a third zombie that came at him, and he tried to shoot him, but it was too much weight on him, and then he did.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Sorry, I'm going to get really excited now. I love that shot where he shot one zombie head and aimed it at the second zombie's head. I mean, it's probably totally impossible, but it looked really great. And then the next was a click. So he ran out of rounds, and then he knew if he was going to go back to those security guards, he was going to find some guns.
Yeah. It was completely off.
Yeah.
I loved the episode, and actually, I've talked to three people who watched it, not you guys, but all three of the people who watched it were like, damn, that was a good episode last night. And I was like, yes, it was. And then I started getting your email, KMO, and I was like, wow, he did not enjoy it as much as I did.
I hadn't had as much to drink, for one, and I think that there was some excellent work in the episode. I don't blame the director at all. I think that the writing was half-baked.
Okay.
But I think when it came to the action sequences, this episode really delivered, and I even liked some of the melodrama back at the house. Although, you know, the, where's Herschel? Oh, he's just off camera.
Yeah.
Let me go get him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so much of it. Just the penny pinching at AMC really shown through, and it's just so irritating because they obviously make a lot of money from this show, and they could afford to spend more on it, and it's a show that deserves more. So there's my 2 cents.
I was looking up Mr. Dickerson, the director, just because I know I've heard of him, you know, a lot, and he actually directed 6 episodes of The Wire.
Oh, wow.
Which I know you're a fan of, KMO.
Absolutely.
Many, many, many things on TV, and a whole range of movies and stuff. He did an episode, one of the Tales from the Crypt movies. So he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's one of those. He's not a celebrity director. He's just a working director who gets stuff done, and that's what The Walking Dead really needs. I mean, I know that's one reason why Frank Darabont got the boot, is that he was such a perfectionist and he was such a pain in the ass about delivering, you know, the product that he thought this could be. And AMC was just, you know, the executives didn't want to deal with him. And so, you know, somebody who's done a lot of TV and who is not a big name and probably doesn't have a big ego, but does have the skills to get something in on time, under budget, is just what the show needs. So,
I would like this guy to handle another couple episodes.
Yes. Yeah, we probably need to start wrapping up. So, final comments.
It was very entertaining. I was keeping a running commentary, sort of taking notes the entire time that I was watching the show. If the show was a lot more engaging, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that, quite frankly. And unfortunately, by doing that, I missed the fabulous reflection sequence that you just described. I didn't tune in enough. So maybe that's not such a good idea for me to do. And, the polarities and just how completely dualistic, really, the show was amusing to me, you know, if a little knee-jerk. And I really enjoyed all of the zombie sequences. So we're still setting up this whole, Shane is unhappy, and he's just going to break at some point. Situation, but they're getting a lot more ensconced in the farm.
Yeah, the farm, which was just a very short stopover in the comic.
Yeah.
It's home.
Yeah. So there's only 3 more episodes, by the way.
Yes.
So there's only 3 more episodes for that field zombie to go shambling back and forth.
He's shambling back to Zombie Town, though, to get some buddies. That's what he's doing. That shot you were talking about, Camo, with Shane reflected in the window glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reflection made him look gray and zombie like, and then that zombie sort of comes out of it, and it was like the zombie, the like you said, the feral, the beast inside Shane, sort of like inside him is this dead thing.
Right.
And I just thought the episode was full of nuance and little subtext things, and I thought, like I said, the lone zombie in the field, that was representing Shane as the odd man out. I thought that image of the zombie coming, you know, through the glass into Shane's reflection, that was the dead, you know, the thing that had died inside Shane coming to the front. You know, because this is Shane making a decision, drawing that line and saying, all right, I'm on this side and I'm going to have to fight my best friend or give up on this thing that felt so real to me. So, I don't know, it just... There was a lot going on, I thought, and it was really well handled, and it, I was drunk, but it flew by, you know, and I don't know, I'm super excited, I'm really ready for next week, which I will be in New York while it's on, so we'll have to work that out.
Well, I will just say that while I have aired my complaints, and they're all about the writing and, you know, the sort of rushed and, I would say, half-baked development of the show, in this season, we've had some really clunky plot contrivances, like Laurie, you know, rushing out for no reason and getting into this really improbable accident, which later led to some really excellent sequences in the show. So yes. I'm hopeful that that's what we're going to have here.
Groundwork is being laid.
Yes. All right. Well, we should probably wrap it up, but thank you both. And Marty, you do it so well, if you would. Take us out.
All right. Everybody, we really want to thank you for listening, and we want to ask you to write us some iTunes reviews and say good things and try to get us more listeners, and tell your friends and write emails and post on Facebook and let us know what you think and what you want next. And until next week, when we come back here again to talk about The Walking Dead, everybody please keep your shotguns loaded, and when you shoot, aim for the head.
Especially if you get 2 heads in a row.
Right. That was an awesome thing when he shoved his gun into that guy's mouth and just blew it out the back.
And then he aimed and he moved that guy's mouth and aimed it at the other guy.
Yes. It was awesome.
With like a third zombie in between. Yeah, that was a zombie sandwich. It was more like
Rick is a badass.
Waffle stack.
Yeah, a short stack of zombies.
The short stack of zombies.